Bloom filters are one of those concepts that always confused me for the longest time in computer science. I'm gonna take a few minutes to actually explain it to you guys. And not what are they, but why do they exist? So I'm gonna flip the question a little bit. If you're interested, stay tuned. So here is a problem. Forget about Bloom filters. Here's a problem today that we know how to solve, but we can do it better. I'm gonna write a service, a web service, Express, not JS, right? That essentially check if my username exists or not. And if you think about it a little bit, this capability, this feature is very simple to build, right? Build a database with all the usernames. As you start writing your usernames, if you want to build this interface, you make a GET request. Does Paul exist? You make a GET request to the server, Express, Django, anything, and then you execute a query against your database, select username from this table. Hopefully you have an index there. And if the record comes back, that means the username exists. If not, then it doesn't exist, right? Problem with this is very slow, right? And this feature is gonna be very popular, right? All these users going to this web page and typing, hey, does test123 exist? Does whatever, right? Everybody wants a fancy nickname, right? So here's the problem, right? This is very slow. So what do we do? Well, I heard about this Redis thing, right? That is actually in memory database. So let's take it from disk and put it in Redis. Well, that's fine. We're gonna do the same thing, execute the same GET request, but this time I'm gonna hit the database, right? And if it's not there, okay, I might sometimes need to go to the actual database because these two can get out of sync. So you created some inefficiency and you actually doubled your memory footprint because you're storing data here and storing data here just to solve this simple problem, okay? So we know how to solve this thing. But some smart people, computer science professors, came up with a solution, very efficient solution, and they called it Bloom filters. So let's explain what these things are. Okay, so with Bloom filter, we're gonna use some in-memory representation. Usually it's very tiny. I'm using 64-bit in this case, okay? And this 64-bit magically have some numbers, right? In this case, the bit 0 is not set, so it's 0. This is 1, this is 0, 0, 0, 0, and this is 1, right? So how does it come up? We'll come to that. But here's the thing. If we're going to make a request, hey, does Paul exist? We will make a request to the server, and in the server, we'll write a function. We will hash the string Paul and mod it 64. And if you know mod, what will happen is this result will only come back with a result from 0 to 63, right? And just like the out of the box, you're gonna get collision all the time, but that's fine. So in this case, Paul is bit number 3, right? And if we go ahead and check in my integer, in my 64-bit integer, this is the filter that we built. Does this bit exist? Is it set? No. If it's not set, then you can absolutely, with 100% guarantee, say that Paul does not exist in the database because it's not set here. And we're going to show how that happened. Okay, so Paul doesn't exist. So I didn't have to even query the database. Let's take another example, right? Where I'm gonna check if Jack exists. I'm gonna make a GET request to the server and I'm gonna mod that string Jack. I wish, first of all, we're gonna hash the string Jack, get a bunch of big number, right? And then mod 64, I'm gonna get a value from 0 and 63. It happened to be 63. I check the bit of 63. Oh, it's set. And if it's set, here's the thing. If that bit is set, that means Jack may be there. And why is maybe? Maybe because there might be another string that matched hash and mod 64 that resulted in 63 and was set. Not necessarily Jack himself, right? But some other string that matched it. But that is actually enough for us. If it's set, then, well, it's set. I'm gonna take the hit and hit the database. So I kind of saved myself some queries at the database. Is this perfect? No, but it's a very efficient thing to actually query, right? To prevent unnecessary querying. By the way, Cassandra uses this in their implementation of consistent hashing all the time, right? The SS tables and all that stuff. They use this internally, right? Because anytime you want to avoid an expensive query to check if something exists or not, or if you want to do this query, but you're not sure if you're going to get a result or not, Bloom filters are very useful. There are some disadvantages to this, but let's look at actually how to create a Bloom filter. I have a brand spanking new bit set here, 64-bit, right? And I'm going to create user Jack for the first time. It's a blank database, right? There's nothing in it. I'm going to create Jack. So if I'm going to create Jack, I am going obviously to make a post request to the server, to the Express server, and I'm going to hash Jack mod 64. I am going to get 63 in this case. And what do you do before writing to the database, the username Jack, is you set this bit. Niceties, isn't it? And then you obviously write it to the database. So see, this is how we start building this in-memory representation of Bloom filter, right? And then let's try Paul. Hey, I'm gonna create a user Paul. Poof, post Paul, right? Mod 64, what do we get? Oh, bit 3. Let's set bit number 3. All right, so far it's good. Let's try, and obviously we write it to the database. Let's try some other user, Tim. Well, I'm gonna take Tim and hash it, mod 64. Guess what? I got number 63 again. And that's absolutely perfect. That's okay, because you only have 64 bits. Obviously, all the strings and names in the world, you will fill between these things, right? And obviously, when you say 63, it's already set, so you don't have to even bother yourself setting it because it's already set. But you always have to hit the database and write it, all right? So that's how it's actually made. Let's take another user, Ali, all right? So Ali, hash Ali and get mode 64, you're gonna get bit number 4 in this case, and you're gonna set that bit, all right? And then obviously write to the database. All right, guys, so that's essentially Bloom filter in a nutshell. I know the actual implementation of Bloom filters are a little bit fancier. They use like 3 locations and all that stuff, right? Sometimes they have more bits, right? They use 3 hash functions just to make the odds harder to get, right? But and that's just to me, that's just an implementation. But if you understand how it works, that's how it works. And that's why it exists, right? So some limitation of Bloom filter, you can get into a case where all of these puppies become 1111111. And in this case, your Bloom filter is essentially useless. You became the first case where you're always gonna hit the database. It's not really harmful. It's not gonna slow you down, but it's not gonna give you any benefit per se, right? So you're gonna have to think about this. Like, the bigger you make this thing, right, then you kind of interfere with your memory footprint. But I mean, it depends how big it is, right? Really. But the shorter it is, then you're gonna get all these false positive cases where you're gonna always hit the database regardless, right? All right, guys, that's it for me today. Hope you enjoyed this video. I'm gonna see you in the next one. You guys stay awesome.